There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Friday. Hey, y'all. I'm Sean. Jeff has left the studio here, still in the building somewhere. We might get him back in here in just a little bit, but lots to do on today's show. Coming up in just a little bit from the Alabama Policy Institute, Phil Williams is going to join us. And API does great stuff, but they know how to do the clickbait for me. They send an email out to me that has a challenge to the ABC board in it, right? And maybe it's okay, maybe I'm typecast, that I question the ABC system in the state of Alabama, and I still do. And this one's specifically dealing with ABC rules about bars and restaurants having to have the end of alcohol sales at 11 o'clock. Things that are arbitrary, you know, get my attention. That's the tennis ball you can throw across the yard. Arbitrary and fiscal waste. Those two things are like bright, shiny tennis balls I will chase across the yard every time. So when I saw this from this op-ed here from Phil Williams, Director of Policy and Strategy at API, I said, got to get that done. So he's going to join us here in just a little bit. Also, it is, I mentioned it this morning, I want to say it again because it's worth mentioning 100 times today, if not more than that. It's Purple Heart Day, observed on August 7th each year. Time for all of us to pause and remember and honor the brave men and women with the Purple Heart, and think about your whether you see somebody with the license plate, you know, a friend, a family member with the Purple Heart. Think about them today, and this is a those people that we think about where we are in this country, where we are in foreign affairs, and go, well, we should be doing more of this and more of that, or less of this and less of that. Stop for a second and think about the people that implement that, the people that do that. The warriors for our country. So, Purple Heart Day today, observed August 7th every year. All right, I want to lay out this, too. Two stories back-to-back and kind of compare and contrast as we get started here. Number one, U.S. economy added U.S. economy added 1.8 million jobs in July, but still down nearly 13 million jobs during the pandemic. Okay? So, that's number one. So, we added 1.8 billion jobs. Pretty heady stuff. But the trough we're in is so tough that 1.8 million jobs added. People would be dancing in the streets, right? In the old day, 1.8 million jobs. But we're still down nearly 13 million jobs during the pandemic. Okay, so, but I'll give you this. I'm not a math magician. But if we could continue to add, follow along with me. If we can continue to add 1.8 million jobs a month, like we did in July, we turned this thing around pretty darn fast. Maybe not as fast enough for Election Day as the politicos are looking at, but for us regular Americans that are trying to make a living, if we can keep that pace. So the headline, I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't say that we're still down 13 million jobs from the pandemic, because that's true, that's honest. But in this story, they just kind of say, "Ah, well, 1.8 million, but we're still down 13 million. But you don't have to go too many months of 1.8 million new jobs added till we get back to those employment numbers we had pre-coronavirus. The question is, will we, right? The question is, will people come back to work? Will there be businesses for them to go back to work at? So on the same side, the other headline here, PPP loans saved 672,000 Alabama jobs. A story from William Thornton over at AL.com. This is of note. This is really, think about our state. Think about 672,000 jobs in the state of Alabama. Now, I've taken issue with different parts of the CARES Act. I've taken issue with where they are now with the HEALS Act or the HEROES Act. Let's go back, though, to the CARES Act. And screw-ups aplenty, and even screw-ups within PPP. And people that didn't get PPP that should have, businesses, 501c4s, I think, and other groups that didn't get it. But William writes here, the Paycheck Protection Program has saved an estimated 672,861 jobs in Alabama, which were jeopardized by the economic effects of COVID-19. You look at the numbers there on the 1.8 million jobs added back, still 13 million in the hole from where we were pre-coronavirus. Holy cow. I mean, I knew it was effective. I knew it helped a lot of places, but folks over at business.org, he says, that's the conclusion of the analysis, which provides resources to small and mid-sized businesses. It estimates more than 50.9 million American jobs have been preserved as a result of the $519 billion in PPP loans. We may look back. We may hit the rear view at some point, and I hope, I pray to God, we're in rear view time at some point on this. We may look back and say, you know, this wasn't great, that thing wasn't great in corona response, but that PPP thing, that was good. How about this? At the top of the list, California, where businesses garnered $68 billion in loans. The analysis said 6.5 million jobs were saved in California. Now, they won't probably celebrate that as much because they want to stick with the bad news there. But I'm going to celebrate the good. The Paycheck Protection Program, William writes here, was created to encourage businesses to retain employees laid off due to coronavirus restrictions. It was originally part of the $2.2 trillion CARES Act, and Congress authorized a second wave of loans after the program was depleted in less than 3 weeks. It says, on the flip side here, more than 700,000 Alabamians have filed for unemployment since the beginning of the coronavirus. Another 11,692 filed for the week ending August 1st. All right, so think about that number. If you had 700,000 file for unemployment, if you just basically, I think the other number was 672,000 saved. Half, darn near, 48% or whatever the math would be, of the possible unemployed people in the state of Alabama were saved by PPP. Now, we can pick at PPP around the edges here, question different parts of it, but I'm going to call that, because it's rare, it stands out. It's the gem gliding, gleaming out there. And the gem to me is then in what is so many times ham-fisted response from the federal government, which this is somewhat ham-fisted, that this actually got something done. Now, the cost of it is a whole other conversation here, and it's worth having. But in the short term, to keep people employed, to keep people off unemployment, to keep people at their jobs, helping those businesses stay solvent going forward, 672,000 Alabamians, that's enough to get my attention. All right, run to the news, and then we're coming back. We'll be joined by Director of API, Phil Williams, joins us next right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1219 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Friday style. Glad to have you along. And good to talk to Phil Williams, Director of Policy and Strategy for the Alabama Policy Institute. And we get to talk about the ABC board. And y'all know how much I love to do that. Phil, thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks, Sean. Good to hear from you.
Hey, good to talk to you as well. And yeah, I'll let you run through your preamble that you do in your statement here about not being a, because this is a thing that's good to say, that you can be interested in an issue without having a dog in the hunt. And you point out that this is not self-serving. You're not spending a lot of time in bars at 11 o'clock, right?
Yeah, I'm not out pub crawling, and I don't own a bar.
Okay, so this is motivated not from personal interest, but a question about who gets to do what? What do unelected officials get to do in our state? Let's talk about that. And if people were under a rock when this went through last week, what is the law now about when they got to stop serving booze in bars and restaurants?
Yeah, so the ABC board took it upon themselves last week to meet as a body and remember, of course, they're not an elected group of people. This is a regulatory board, and they decided that bars and other, you know, like entertainment venues, restaurants, whatever, cannot serve alcohol after 11 p.m. because this might be scary or more dangerous.
There's so many levels here. The arbitrary nature of it, the unelected officials and the arbitrary nature gets my attention. And it's, I mean, I'm going to ask, the, you know, at 10:45, there's no danger from spreading coronavirus, but at 11:05, there is?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, first of all, it's arbitrary and capricious, which is one of the quickest ways in court you can overturn a government regulation. And the second piece of this is not their scope. They are not the arbiters of what is healthy in Alabama.
This isn't just Phil and Sean riffing on what they might be thinking. Because in your piece at API, you said one board member did espouse concern that late night consumption could increase fraternization. Is that the job? Where in the job description at ABC is that, Phil?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because I said that sounded like a country song. but all said and done, the crazy thing that I found when I researched the law on this is the statute does allow that they can have a voice in the morals and the peace of the people of the state of Alabama. And I thought that was ludicrous. But nonetheless, they don't say they're adjusting morals. They don't say that. They're saying that in the corona world that we live in right now, that it is safer for the state of Alabama if alcohol stops being served at 11 p.m.
It is so strange, I'm not encouraging this, but if there was a situation they said, listen, bars and restaurants are the font of everything corona. We have got to, if we could only shut them down, we could get this virus gone. We could rid this. But it's, and I don't want that to happen. I'm just saying if they did that, at least it would be more logical and say, okay, we've got to shut these things down for some period of time versus, well, they're open, but we're going to carve out little exceptions here.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost whimsical in its approach. and people need to keep in mind, this is not just that seedy bar down the road that you don't care about anyway. This is tourism dollars on the coast. This is hotels that are struggling right now in corona world. This is restaurants that have late night operations. And so all said and done, this is broad sweeping. And the penalty here is the potential loss of a license. And what that means is a business that simply did what it was allowed to do yesterday can now lose its license to ever operate.
Right now, when I just... You know, we're talking about keeping businesses going. I was talking about the PPP numbers, how many jobs saved in Alabama, what we're doing to try to keep people working, businesses going. Yet here is our beverage control folks for the state that are putting businesses at risk.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. It's a double whammy. I mean, right when you're saying, okay, you can open up under certain conditions, then the regulatory board comes back and sets new conditions that really are arbitrary and don't make sense. And Sean, here's a key piece of this. The statutory authority for them to make determinations is vested in the fact that they can only do so with the governor's open approval. And there's been no approval. If the governor approves of this, she's going to have to speak for herself. They can't do this and pretend that she likes it. So in my opinion, not only are they acting arbitrary, but they're acting outside the scope of what the law allows them to do without her approval.
I wonder how aware, and I mean, I don't know what's in Governor Ivey's mind, but how aware she is of it, because it's a little bit like having your cake and eating it too, right? Except it makes it not legal, that she could have this go through, but she doesn't have to. It doesn't have to be on her watch, right, Phil?
Well, and that's the thing. I'm not sure if she's aware of the nuance of the statute. but the statute clearly specifies they can only make these determinations with, quote, the approval of the governor. And they better be able to publish that, or someone's going to sue them who have their bar shut down and lost more revenue than they shouldn't have, and they're going to have actual damages because they're going to show they acted outside the scope of what the law allows.
Yeah, you also write in here, and I think it's telling. If people just hear this and they maybe have blinders on, don't look right and left here, but you point out, okay, some other businesses. Let's talk about dentists out there, right? And the let's put this in the world of dentistry, and how would that work with Alabama's board?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what if they come back and say, you know what, we think it's more dangerous to fill a cavity after 3 p.m.? Or we think it's far more dangerous to practice law or practice real estate after 5 p.m. Well, all you're doing is creating an arbitrary roadblock to the free market. And that is not what we're supposed to be about.
And once again, it's not like there's a case being made that says we're going to shut this thing down, these businesses down, because we have to for some overwhelming public good, even though I'd argue with that, but we're going to shut them down for an overwhelming public good. It's a human selected time here of 11 p.m. And you have 30 minutes to drink your drink, I guess, and then...
Yeah, last call, you know, the evening news is on, everybody be aware, it's almost time to shut things down. So, I don't get it, and I think, you know, the title of my op-ed was pretty clear. I said, hey, ABC board, know your role, and apparently they don't.
Well, don't get me started. I think there's a lot of places where they don't know the role, and I'm glad there's folks like you that are looking into the law here, because, you know, for butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers out there, you hear that the board makes some decision, and you, with knowing the danger of assumptions, you make an assumption that, okay, well, they must have the authority to do that.
Well, you'd love to believe so, but when you research the law on this one, it's pretty clear that their authority was only partially met. Until they have a governor's open approval and sanction of the decision they've made, it does not have binding effect, in my opinion. I'm just one lawyer who's looking at it, but I'll be honest with you, I think they've opened themselves up for some serious liability.
Do you feel, I mean, I can't imagine, as scared as business owners are, small businesses out there with bars or restaurants, that they want to risk this, but I wonder if there will be that test case, if that bar will say, it's 11:01, we're still selling.
Well, I'm sure if somebody's paying attention out there in the plaintiff's attorney world, they're trying to think of their favorite bar and going and asking them pretty soon if they want to be a test case client. But I look at it, the biggest problem we've got here is government overreach and the continual shifting of where the goalposts are. And we've got to get back to a state of normalcy. I reject the fact that we are, or the call that we are in some kind of a new normal. It's not new normal, it's abnormal. And we've got to stop putting more roadblocks in the face of every good citizen who's trying to make a living.
Well said. Tell folks, we've got a couple minute and a half here before we wrap up. Phil, tell folks about that don't know about API. What do y'all do?
Yeah, thank you, Sean. I appreciate that. The Alabama Policy Institute is a conservative think tank and advocacy center. We got 30 years of history, founded by Congressman Gary Palmer. And you can find us at www.alabamapolicy.org. And we're on social media as well. And we've got great information out there to help citizens know how best to argue conservative viewpoints.
And you know, I know you did it in the legislature, doing it now. And if you have any extra time, you're digging into ABC stuff. The question I've had and talked about over the years is this situation where ABC has to lease or rent their space for their retail stores, because they can't be, even though the state of Alabama owns real estate, they can't put those stores in there. Have you heard that before?
Oh, brother, listen, I was one of the few who was willing to sign on the bills every year to deregulate ABC. You know, people don't realize that every person who stocks the shelves and runs the cash register is a state employee with benefits and all, and we have to fund it. And then it competes with private enterprise. And then on top of that, yes, they have leaseholds where they lease the space, and I think people should take a close look at who owns those leaseholds.
I'm glad you said it, because, see, y'all, I'm not the only person saying that. So Phil will say the same thing.
It's a dark secret that's going to come out one day.
I'm going to keep talking about it. You're obviously talking about it. Maybe we'll catch some people's ears over time.
Yeah, good. I'm with you on it, so let's talk some more.
Very good. We'll do it again real soon. Phil Williams, API Director for Policy and Strategy and General Counsel, thank you for your time.
Hey, thanks, Sean. Have a good day.
Hey, you too. All right, we'll grab some calls when we get back at 343-0106. See all that stuff I've told you all about in the past with that? Once again, before you fire up the text and say, well, ABC, you know, regulates this and that. We don't want minors. I think the ABC boards before said, you know, to people like me, well, you don't want minors. You must want minors out there just buying booze and running rampant in the street. No. There still should be an enforcement mechanism to make sure. And you can still get your excise tax when the booze comes into the state, Alabama. You still make that money. Okay? Do that part. The expanded role and the nuance of this dinosaur of the ABC in this state leaves me flabbergasted. All right, news is next, then we'll get to the calls.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Coming to the phones in just a second. Just want to get this headline in, and then we'll give you more on this story once we get done with phone calls. 16 people arrested now over the Beirut port blast. Lebanese authorities have now arrested 16 as part of an investigation. And that they're having big riots there, too, calling for people to step down, people in charge there in Lebanon. Tell you what, anybody who wanted to store that much ammonium nitrate in that facility for 7 years and thought that was cool, yeah, I might ask for them to step down, too. Might ask that same question. All right, to the phones, and first up, Dave is in Mobile. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Sean.
Man, what's up?
I read a story, AP put it out, about we had 4,000 computers that were being held by customs because they came from China, where we had a concentration type atmosphere for building the things. And my big problem with that is we just lost 150-some thousand plus Americans. Why in the hell is our governor buying anything from China?
Okay, so this is that story from earlier this week. Make sure I'm on the right subject here. Those that the laptops that the governor was talking about earlier that they were using
the school kids.
Yeah, using the CARES Act money for the kids who do online learning. Yeah, and this is they were coming in. I know that you're right. I saw that customs had them. They're coming from China. Is that the story?
Yeah, they were coming from China. Same place iPhones come from.
And a lot of other stuff.
We got Huey Packard that makes stuff, and I don't have stock in Huey Packard before we get going with that. But we have companies here in the United States that make computers like Huey Packard. They got a plant, and I think it's Houston. They've got one, I don't know, someplace in California. You know, why would she spend that money buying it from them?
Dave, you ask a solid question. A solid question. I mean, why right now do we do that? I don't know. I can't speak for the governor, but here I'm getting a little more what Dave was talking about. The laptops were scheduled for delivery to the Etowah County school system this week. They said the superintendent, Alan Cosby, said Tuesday his district ordered the Chromebook computers in June through a reseller called Trinity 3 Technology, which helps supply schools with remote learning technology. Laptops were scheduled for delivery to his system this week, but the company informed district officials computers were being held by the U.S. Department of Commerce and Customs because they involved the electronics manufacturer accused of human rights violations in China, like you were saying, Dave. I don't know. I don't know what the governor knew. I don't know what this school system knew. But I'm on first blush looking at this, it doesn't look good for the state.
No, I mean, it. 150,000 plus Americans dead because of the Chinese virus.
Yep.
You know, and we're buying stuff from them. I don't understand. I don't know who the comptroller is that purchased this. I don't know what their policies are, but they need to get rid of them.
There we go. Dave, appreciate your call. Yeah, I'm going to get this story. I've got a story here from the Dothan Eagle. And Dave, thank you for bringing that up. So Dothan Eagle says, yeah, the laptop scheduled for delivery this week. Company informed the district officials, and this is the Etowah County School System, that the computers were being held by the U.S. Department of Commerce and Customs because they involved an electronics manufacturer accused of involvement in human rights violations in China. Cosby, who is this superintendent of schools for Etowah County, Alan Cosby, is quoted in here. So Cosby said his district, which surrounds the city of Gadsden, was told it might not receive the products until October. Superintendent said the holdup involved Hefi, Bitland Information Technology Limited, one of the 11 Chinese companies that the U.S. imposed trade sanctions on last month as the Commerce Department cracked down on imports made with suspected forced labor, as well as companies implicating other human rights abuses in China's Muslim northwestern region of Xinjiang. Now, so, Dave, not only is it coming from China, but it's coming from Chinese companies, at least according to the story, that the government believes are using forced labor. Scott Gill, president and CEO of Trinity 3 Technology, said he could not comment specifically about Etowah's order because the company does not disclose customer-specific information, but confirmed, quote, a number of devices were held up that were scheduled for deliveries to schools across the country, end quote. Cosby said he'd never received any communications from the Commerce Department or custom officials, but did reach out to offices of U.S. Senators Richard Shelby, Doug Jones, as well as Republican Representative Robert Aderholt to resolve the issue. He spoke with Aderholt, but later opted to cancel the district's order and purchase the laptops from another vendor that could deliver them by September. Still with those kids, when are they going back? Okay, classes were scheduled to begin August 18th for more than 8,000 students in the district. So, tell you what, I'll pop this story up on the Twitter feed. You can find the at FMTalk1065 on Twitter. Check out the, there's a few more paragraphs of information in there. I'd love to hear from you on that. All right, let's see. Let's go to the phone. Who? Oh, it's Dr. Lou. All right, Dr. Lou Campomenosi joining us. Hey, Dr. Lou.
Hey, Sean, how are you doing, guy?
I'm doing good here. I'm just kind of, Dave just brought this story to light to me about these computers that were slated to go to Etowah County.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is a question that we had in Baldwin County when the former superintendent spent $1,000 a pop for Apple computers, you know, losing $50 million, But I mean, I think that that's something that needs to be dug into, and we'll certainly start looking into it, finding out what happened. But the reason I called was, I understand Phil Williams and the API, you know, they are conservative to a very large degree, but here's something that's going on, Sean. And on July 14th, the State Board of Education had their last meeting. Senator McClendon got up there, criticized the superintendent Mackey, threw him under the bus because the argument that they were making was that their reopening plan wasn't sufficient, okay? And my take on this is just another attempt by Marsh and all those people to blame the school board so that they can go back and say, you see, the school board is the problem. We've got to get rid of them.
And let me fill in there for a second.
2 weeks after that.
Tell them who you're talking about when you said Marsh. So we're Senate President Pro Tem Del Marsh is who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, but you see, the interesting thing here is that McClendon is on the State Senate Education Committee. The man who is in charge of the committee, the chair, his name is Melson. Mm-hmm. Melson did not know anything about what McClendon was doing in terms of a plan, an alternative plan to the reopening. Okay? So just think with me for a second. Here you have people who want to get rid of the school board, and what they're doing is they're laying a predicate to blame the board for anything that goes wrong with the reopening. Now, you know as well as I do that this reopening is going to be problematic for any number of reasons.
Sure,
okay?
Sure.
All right. So what happens with API? 2 weeks after McClendon throws down the gauntlet over reopening. API comes out and says, well, you know, the need for reform is still here, and the first step is getting rid of the State Board of Education. I mean, I just don't follow how you are, quote, conservative if you are going down this road. And we've basically showed this before. Elected boards are fine in some cases and not fine in other cases. But the reality is, having an elected board at least preserves the opportunity for people to say who they want to, you know, be governed by.
Yeah, it gives you the reset. It gives you a reset.
Exactly. And I mean, I mean, to argue as they do that there's something fundamentally wrong with the elected board does not speak to the real question, Sean, and it's all about governors and state legislators keeping Common Core. That's the critical issue. Now, and look, I hate to bring that kind of stuff up when you're talking about other issues, but I'm tired of listening to API beat this drum and then tell us that they're conservative. It just doesn't fly with me.
Well, we'll have to get Phil Williams back on to talk about that. I was specific on that op-ed about the ABC and the arbitrary and capricious nature.
That's probably right. I didn't even look into that, okay?
Oh, wait till you do.
It's his conservative credentials, and then they're doing this to undermine the fundamental right of people to elect people into government.
You know what I want to do? You've known me long enough. I want to get both of y'all on the air and let y'all have at it. That's what I want to do.
That's fine with me. We'll work it out.
Okay, Dr. Lou, thank you.
All right.
Appreciate the call.
Take care. Bye.
All right, you too. That's where I go with this stuff. Like, okay, get everybody on there. Let them chat about it. Hey, thank you. From the text line here, we'll see if this is already starting some issues here traffic-wise. Northbound 65 at the 158 overpass. That's Industrial Parkway, Saraland. There's a vehicle. Okay, it's like a delivery truck, and it looks like it has stopped on the overpass. I'm just guessing. Let's see. Did they say northbound? So that's going to be the vehicle heading eastbound on 158. So it might give you an issue there. 158 and 65. Nothing down on 65 northbound, but the vehicle up on 158. So if you're exiting or trying to get on, it may be an issue for you there. We'll keep our eyes on that and come right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, to 12:51 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Talking precious metals earlier this week, and when I talk about precious metals and what the prices are doing out there, I go to the experts, our buddies at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, and my friend Angelo is checking in right now. Hey, Angelo.
Hey, how we doing today, Sean?
Doing good. You've had a heck of a week, I know, when it comes to precious metals. Okay, walk us through what's happened this week. What's gold doing today, silver, all that?
All throughout the week, gold and silver have been rising. They hit their peak last night and sort of corrected a little bit. There were some people profit-taking some sell-offs. If you look at the long-term contracts that are out there, it looks like there's still a lot of room for gold and silver to grow. That being said, silver got up to about 29-something last night, around 27-something right now, but starting to creep up again. And gold is still holding at over $2,000 an ounce. It peaked out somewhere around 2060, maybe 2080 an ounce last night, and then sort of dropped down a little bit. And now it's starting to work its way back up again.
Yeah, isn't that, you said profit taking, it's exactly what, remember what I was asking you on Wednesday? Because the silver.
What's the number?
What's the number? Because the silver, and people have a number in their head. And for me, I don't get emotionally attached to the silver, right? There's a certain point, and I wish I had gold, too, but silver's where I've been. And there's a certain point, there's a price point that is gone, man. I'm going to sell it.
And a lot of people look at it that way, and we've had a lot of people coming into the shop, whether they're selling an old class ring, maybe some sterling silver flatware that they never use. Maybe it's that gold or silver bullion they've been collecting and sitting on for a while. Maybe it's a rare coin collection. You know, they've got that number in mind, or they come by and go, well, let me see what it's worth today. And we've been buying a whole lot of items. this week here at the shop. A lot of gold, a lot of silver been coming in. Some pretty interesting stuff as well.
Yeah, that's worth reminding folks about, too, because you and I are always talking about the cool stuff you'll have to buy in there as gift items. Jewelry items is great open L9s, but probably don't spend enough time talking about the fact that people have those kind of things laying around. Right now is a great time to get. Y'all are buying.
We certainly are. If you've got a sterling silver flatware set, for example, or a sterling silver platter, we're paying strong on those because we need those metals here at the shop. And gold and silver at the highest price they've been in a long time. Gold's pretty much around the highest price it's been ever. So you always want to sell high, buy low. So this is the time to think about selling some of those items that have been just collecting dust.
All right. Tell folks how to come find you.
Yeah, we're in Midtown at 2204 Government Street. You can check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com. Or if you want to see the cool stuff that's coming in that we're selling to folks, check us out on Instagram or on Facebook.
Thanks, Angelo.
Have a good weekend, Sean.
You too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Yeah, you're watching the precious metals this week. It's been something. Thank you. My buddy Philip sent me a text picture here to 343-0106 showing, he said he's northbound 65. Let's see. So that looks like I'm going to do by deduction. Say the traffic's heavy southbound 65 at exit 13. So there it just had the story a second ago about up at Industrial Parkway 158. From what I saw, and somebody who's up there, by Saraland people, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, because I'm just looking at a couple pictures here, but it looks like there's no actual, I don't see the traffic issue on 65. It looks like it's up on 158, but I see this traffic backed up. Maybe it's because people aren't able to exit off of southbound 65 onto 158. Maybe that's what it is. Just seeing these pictures. Okay. Well, I got you. Thank you. So don't write northbound on a text, Philip, when I'm... Okay, so he said, I'm heading south, so that's northbound. So that's northbound traffic. So that makes more sense. So somebody's wanting to get off there on the right, okay? He said, okay, they're rerouting around the bridge. So as you're trying to exit 65, right, you're going to exit 65. So you're northbound, want to exit 65 to get on 158. That's where your stall is. All right, good. Appreciate the update, and you can always, when you're in a safe place to do it, text us information, text us pictures, from all that. You can do that. When you're stopped in park, your keys in the trunk. Don't do that. In the back of the truck, in the truck box, your keys there, you're completely stopped. Then you can text us pictures, take them, and send them to 343-0106. All right, this texter says, by the way, too, I wish we have to go through a backstory here. This year has been something for FM Talk 106.5 and the growth of this radio station and the number of new listeners out there that might not have heard. So I'll tell you, there's some backstory. So I've been asking questions about the ABC board and what the ABC board does and doesn't do for, well, I was doing it actually before we even started this radio show, but I've been doing it on the air here about 11 years. This texter says, not only do the ABC stores compete with independent retailers, they have to buy their stock from them. Hear, hear. That's the old analogy I always said, you know, what if it was hamburgers? That there was a state-run hamburger shop, right? It was State Burgers or whatever we'll call it. And then if you were McDonald's or Burger King or you were Butch Cassidy's and you have to go buy your hamburgers from the State Burger store and then mark them up beyond that? Yeah, it's something. But the part I mentioned with Phil Williams there about the real estate thing, I've talked about it over and over again. It's good to hear somebody else talking about it. We'll do a show on it. We'll do an hour on it down the road, all these nuances with ABC. But this came up during the Bentley administration when they pointed out they had all this real estate that the state owned. They foreclosed or for whatever reason, the state had shopping centers and this and that and the other. Okay. They couldn't put the ABC stores in there. Because I said, well, you got the... There was one in Montgomery that was like a high traffic area. I said, well, put the ABC store in there, right? And the state would pay itself, we the taxpayers. Said, no, you can't do it. ABC board has to... ABC stores have to be leased. Those spaces have to be leased. Well, that'd be an incentive, right? Incentive to politically back some people more than other people if you had a big lease deal. Be something. All right, and we can pick this up next hour, but I wanted to just a little bit more on that story out of Beirut. They said there's been 16 arrests made now. I don't know. anything. It doesn't say like they believe the conspiracy was this, that, or the other. It's just that Lebanese officials have arrested 16 there in Beirut in association with that gigantic explosion we saw earlier this week. So as more information comes in on that, we'll pass along. Plus, oh, you see this, the big issue this weekend, social distancing, telling people they can't do things. What if you had to tell a bunch of bikers that? Yeah, what's happening in Sturgis right now? We'll get into that when we come back. And also, take your calls.